This episode is brought to you by Just Egg. You can't have plant-based breakfast without a plant-based egg. You can get started with a free sample. Just head to ju.st/hrn.
This week on Meat and Three, we're celebrating the food culture of South Carolina with its chef ambassadors.
Oh, I'm super excited that it's soft shell crab season. Those little suckers are delicious.
People think, oh, tomato is a tomato. No, there is a good tomato and a bad tomato. So when they come to Hampton or even, you know, even in South Carolina, you can really find incredible ingredient.
We started getting lettuce from Micro Leon Farms in Conway. It's a super sweet family that runs that little farm.
Tune in to Meat and Three, available wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Allison Kane, and welcome to In the Sauce, a podcast about building consumer brands from the ground up. I love doing this show because I get to interview everyone from production gurus to marketing and social media mavens, anyone who can guide me on this crazy journey. This is the story of building Haven's Kitchen sauces, but it's also the story of every growing brand because we're all in the sauce. Today, I'm speaking with Jamila Owens-Todd, owner of Golden Grocer, a natural health food store in St. Louis that has served the community for 40 years. Jamila, a naturopathic doctor who's been in practice since 2007, spent years recommending the shop to her patients. And in 2018, when the previous owner decided to sell the business, Jamila stepped in. Eventually. Jamila, I'm so excited to talk with you. We, I guess, met in quotes on Instagram because you started carrying our sauces, which was really fun, and you posted about them. And then we started following you guys back, and just it's an amazing story, and I'm so excited for our listeners to hear it. So welcome.
Well, thank you. I appreciate being here, and I appreciate you having this platform, which is really cool to chat with people. So I'm excited and pretty much honored to even be asked.
It's an honor to have you. So from what I understand, you know, I've read some stuff. I mean, there's a lot, but you fully took over Golden Grocer in January of 2020. Is that like,
I'm laughing in order to not cry on the
right. Spot. Yeah. So let's talk about that. I mean, let's talk about the timing of that. And I mean, on one hand, I imagine like any new business, and then a pandemic hits, things go insane. But you also had a health, like, focused business that was essential.
Yeah.
So there's like the insanity on both ends, kind of. So tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah. I mean, I was contacted by John, the previous owner of the store, who had been operating the store for 40 years.
That's crazy.
He had some partners at one point, and just imagine 40 years of running a small business. You either, you know, keep it going or you just say, you know what, I'm done.
Right.
So he was at that point, and I was hesitant at first and finally twisted my arm. No, but you know, it just seemed like a good fit because being in the health field, in the alternative health field, you're constantly trying to promote new options, new things, and just considerations of how to live your life holistically. So here's this extension of my practice, this actual physical brick and mortar store
right. That
has a host of, you know, products that you can incorporate into your wellness plan. So, you know, we kind of went back and forth, had some meetings, and then I came on in October 2019 and then transitioned fully into ownership in January of 2020. And then the pandemic came, and that was a host of a whole bunch of things. You know, everyone was in this state of unknown and fear and what to do next. And I remember thinking, well, at the time, my practice, we were just going to close the building that my practice was in for six
right.
Well, you know, or sorry, it started out as 2 weeks, and then 2 weeks went
to... I know, us too with the cooking school.
Yeah.
Like, we'll reopen in 10 days.
Mm-hmm. No. And what was interesting is that the store, being a grocery store, was an essential business.
Mm-hmm.
And here we are in the state of what's going on, some unknown virus. you hear stories of, you know, New York hospitals using vitamin C, and everyone's talking about elderberry. Well, right. Guess we sold all of those things, vitamin D3, elderberry, right. Vitamin C. So the good problem that we had was we kept selling out. We could not keep things on the shelf. And there were all of these theories as to we would order something and it would take 3 to 4 weeks to come in. Well, you have now suppliers who are short-staffed and mm-hmm. the logistics nightmares of companies not having trucks and trucks not coming all the way into the city. I mean, it was just a host of, right. of things. But interestingly enough, it still felt good. Mm-hmm. It felt good to be of service, to provide. Right. A space where people can come and kind of lay all of those fears and worries down and then walk away with something that made them feel as if they were promoting their health and supporting themselves in this huge time of unknown.
Yeah, I can imagine that. I mean, tell me a little bit about, like, I remember, you know, again, we weren't an essential business. We were a cooking school. I was terrified mm-hmm. to have anyone anywhere near a cash register. Like, yeah. How did you handle the team at that point? And when you came on, did you keep the same staff that yeah. had been there? And what was that like managing the human people?
Yeah, you know, Golden Grocer has some troopers. I mean, these are some hardcore health nuts, you know, mm-hmm. and I love them all. So I was at every moment like, okay, we're shutting down. And they were mm-hmm. like, we are not shutting it. You know, they right. kept me a little bit on task by yeah. saying, oh, we're coming in every day. I did. The one thing I did do was cut the hours back 1 hour. So instead of closing at 8 p.m., we went to 7.
Right.
Because more people were home and we didn't really need to be open that late. And the city had curfews and whatnot. So, yeah, my team, they were just like, no, we need to be here for the people. We want more hours if right. we can. Don't reduce hours. I ended up hiring someone during that time because we did need the additional help.
Wow.
So it was a very interesting place to be. And I'm really grateful for the team that I had because they are hardcore. They're yeah. like, we got to be here and support the people.
So you were, you know, a naturopath, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, maybe break that down a little bit before I then go into asking you the other questions. But
yes.
I mean, how did you get into that field? I understand a little bit, you know, mm-hmm. I do take vitamin D every morning
nice.
Because, okay. you know, I'm a woman of a certain age and magnesium, but like, I know there's more to it than herbal supplements. So sure. tell sure. me a little bit about that journey.
Yeah. And they say once a naturopathic doctor, always a naturopathic doctor. So I can't shake it if I try.
Mm-hmm.
So my studies started out as a chemist and I worked in the pharmaceutical industry and wanted to find a cure for cancer. And that was mm-hmm. I had these very altruistic thoughts about what science could do. Not totally jaded, but just what that field is about. It wasn't necessarily about getting in front of the illness.
Mm-hmm. You know,
pharmaceuticals can serve a great purpose and they can heal and support people in many different ways. But there was this other part of healing that just wasn't being addressed, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, in the sciences, you kind of like, what's your PhD? Like, that's everyone, you know, with a bachelor's in some chemistry degree or biology, you're thinking, what's your PhD going to be in? And so I thought my PhD was going to be in organic chemistry
mm-hmm.
To really kind of dive into medical and, you know, more of the pharmaceutical end. So I got into the pharmaceutical industry, thankfully, and that brought more clarity as to what I really wanted to do was to study the pharmacy and pharmaceuticals of natural products.
Mm-hmm.
So I've always kind of been like the herb girl in the lab.
Mm-hmm.
Then I started to seek out, where are some programs where I can really dive into herbs or medicines or nutritional components in a more scientific way? And that's how I found the naturopathic degree program. That's a 4-year degree program. You have to have a, you know, bachelor's degree. You have to understand microbiology, immunology, pathology,
right.
all of those key core sciences. And so that program, 4 years of study, you're learning the sciences, but you're also kind of weaving in, how do I treat this more alternatively?
Mm-hmm.
So you're looking at Chinese herbs, you're looking at traditional, what I say, Native American herbs. You're looking at, you know, vitamins and how to use those as medicine. You're looking at lifestyle factors. Diet is number one. So when we say right. nutrition, it's not just supplements. It's more so, what am I consuming?
Right.
Naturopathic doctors, we say, you know, not you are what you eat. We say you are what you absorb.
Mm-hmm.
Foods, but are you really absorbing them? So it really looks at a root cause type of system. Why am I having migraines? Is it my hormones? Is it the stress response? Is it, you know, a circulatory component that needs to be addressed more deeper? And we dive deep into that and really focus on the root cause of why an imbalance is present. And then we seek to support you and heal that imbalance with alternative therapies like vitamins, like herbs, food, acupuncture, you know, physical therapy, all of those things mm-hmm. are encompassing of naturopathic medicine.
Very cool. And so you get that degree and, you know, you decided to go into private practice, or, I mean, why St. Louis? What is the community like in St. Louis for that type of alternative? I don't know the community well, and I don't know how it's structured at all.
I mean, St. Louis is very much the Midwest, and that's mm-hmm. a loaded statement.
Yeah.
Midwest comes with many, you know, gifts, kind of, you know, quiet, not as active as a big city, but then there's the kind of slow, not as progressive thought when it comes to things like medicine, lifestyle, or art, or culture. So mm-hmm. it is improving. I am born and raised in St. Louis. Mm-hmm. So I've been able to kind of go away and come back and go away and come back a few times and see the improvements. The course of study was in Toronto, Ontario, and Canada, which I loved. Mm-hmm. That city, it's an awesome city. I loved it enough to import a male back and marry him.
I mean, you extracted what you needed out of Toronto and, you know, just rehomed him. That's amazing.
I need to bring him back with me. So coming back to St. Louis was twofold. It was being closer to family. But it was also the community that motivated me to seek out other forms of healing mm-hmm. because you did not have a lot of naturopaths or alternative health care at the time when I came back. There was one other naturopath in the city, and I got to know her and chat with her. Right now, there are, I think, six mm-hmm. in the area, you know. So it was one of those things where it was definitely kind of out on a limb trying to convince people that they can heal themselves, trying to people that diet and food is medicine. But then what I found surprisingly was there was a huge, huge community who wanted this, who were seeking and just didn't have, let's say, a reliable source. Mm-hmm. Or they had to travel to some other part of the world, the East or West Coast, to get this type of information.
Right.
So it was more well received than I would have assumed. And even more so within the medical community. You know, there's this thing where you're going to have this, you know, fight against some MDs. And mm-hmm. I found that I was embraced more, and MDs wanted to have an ally and support their patients, because at the end of the day, we all want people to be healthy.
Right. And you had Golden Grocer, which is also kind of funny. You had this grocery, natural grocery store near you, I presume, right?
Yeah.
That you could just connect mm-hmm. with and send people to. Was that unusual for a store like that to be around and thriving for 40 years?
I think what's very unusual is at the time that they started, they were the only store that vegetarians could go to, you know?
And right.
Back in the day when you just had this block of bland tofu and people didn't know what to do with it.
Right.
Veggie burgers were not great back then. So now you got a whole host of them. So yeah, they were innovators in many ways of kind of breaking in and being, you know, kind of trendsetters in the health industry in this area. And then to survive, you know, Whole Foods coming in literally mm-hmm. on the street is pretty remarkable. It's a remarkable feat for them to be able to have done that. So I felt really honored to be asked to take over the store. But, you know, you said something. When I did come back to St. Louis, my office was 3 blocks away from Golden Grocer.
Right.
So I would send my patients there and they would send patients to me. So it was just a very welcomed professional relationship.
And then you get this call in 2018.
Yeah.
I believe you said John.
Yeah. Yep. The first call was in 2018. And I was like, no, I'm not doing it.
Why did he, was he just like, hey, I have this crazy idea. I think you might buy this or take it over. Like what, you know, why you? You were a fully, you know, you had a whole thing going on.
Yeah, I had a whole thing going on. And he just said, you know, I thought about it. I thought it would be good. You would be a good fit for the company. And I was like, this guy's crazy, you know?
Right.
First, and I said, no, I was like, no, because I had a whole host of other things going on at the time.
Right.
But then a year to that date, he called me back in August. So he called me August 2018, called me back a year later, August 2019. I said, hey, I'm ready to retire. I think I'm selling the business. I think you would be a good fit. And I said, you know, I spoke to my husband about it. And I always come with these crazy ideas. And he's just like, okay, what do you want me to do?
Because he's Canadian and lovely.
Right. You know, right. Yeah. So he said, yeah, I mean, you should do it. And so he gave me the kind of extra support because, right. You know, yeah. And then from there, it was just, it was smooth sailing in so many ways.
Okay, we're going to take a little break. And then when we come back, I kind of want to start with like, you walk in August 2019, about to take over this place. And we'll be right back.
Just Egg is now the fastest growing egg brand in the United States. Bring more plant-based consumers in your doors with easy-to-use Just Egg. You can get started with a free sample. Just head to ju.st/hrn. That's ju.st/hrn. Made from plants, Just Egg is a better egg for you and for the planet. It's healthier, with no cholesterol and less saturated fat, and it's more sustainable. Just Egg uses less water and generates fewer carbon emissions. Most importantly, it's delicious. For our listeners who operate a food service establishment, you can get a sample for free. Head to ju.st/hrn. That's ju.st/hrn. Just Egg makes a delicious plant-based addition to any menu. It's available as a liquid scramble, great for omelets, frittatas, stir fries, and French toast. There's also a frozen pre-baked folded version that's ideal for filling breakfast sandwiches or topping salads. Chef Jose Andres calls Just Egg mind-blowing, and Bon Appetit says, it's so good, I feel guilty eating it. Put the fastest-growing egg brand on your menu. Get a free sample of Just Egg for your restaurant at ju.st/hrn.
I'm back with Jamila Owens Todd, owner of Golden Grocer. Okay, so he called you 2018. You said no. He called you 2019. You're like, you know what? Was there this part? I mean, I would love to own a grocery store, but that's because I have this fantasy of things like that, and it's similar to why I opened a cooking school. It was all very sort of, I'm talking to consumers and I'm, you know, I see my regulars and I'm helping them, you know, but the back end of that, or like the logistics part of that, and the toilet breaking and not getting the right order and getting a bill for something that you didn't buy, like all of that is just such a nightmare. I'm imagining that you knew a little bit of both going in, or you wouldn't have taken it. And you wouldn't have said no in the first place. But what were the big sort of surprises when you did say yes and you walked in and you were like, hi, this is my new store, or like my old store, and I'm the new me?
Yeah. Mind you, that I didn't really make my presence public until about February or March of 2020.
Okay.
Put me in as a partner and just was in an observation mode and doing a lot of back office stuff.
Got it.
To give you an idea, the store did not have a POS system, meaning they did not have a registered point of sale. It was very old school. Like,
oh
this,
my gosh.
Yeah, nothing was automated. They didn't have a website. You know, it was just one of those things where I knew there was going to be some work just in my head, what I needed in order to operate this. So I came in with this mission of I'm going to have to make changes, and no one wants this place to change. Like, it is a community staple.
Yeah.
So I try to be as subtle as I can and just like, oh, there's an updated computer system. Oh, wait, wow. I see the Facebook page is actually having posts on it. You know, it's like,
oh my gosh.
So that, because that took some time, I didn't come out and say, hey, I'm the owner.
Right.
And then by the time that I did, that's kind of at the time when the country was shutting down.
Right. This is a movie.
Oh, yeah.
It's like a great movie. I'm picturing like, were people, was there like a notepad? And people were like, your celery is, you know, $1.89 and like added it like with a calculator. Like what, how is there no POS system in a grocery store?
They had a register that was probably purchased in 1979.
Oh my gosh, this is amazing.
Yeah. So it was like, and I did, I was like refusing to, I'm like, I'm not using this thing. It is right. So, well, I mean, there's so many other options, but again, it worked for him. You know, it's like, why, it's one of those, why change it? You know, if it broke, don't fix it. And that's how the store operated. So many things were, meanwhile, I had moved my practice, which is funny, to like full on like self, you know, scheduling online. And I mean, I had this full on, I moved to taking my notes, making them virtual.
Right.
I was already doing virtual visits.
Right. You were in the tech world and you just hopped into a time warp.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I had to get it up to par in a sense in my head. And so the beauty of that was, you know, you had a lot of people who kind of came out of the, you know, the woodworks like, oh, finally, there's some changes. Mm-hmm. And you had a lot of people like, wait, why is this changing? This I love the kind of old school antiquated mom and pop component to it. So there was a little bit of that. But more, I found more people were welcoming the change because now they can see their email of their points that they got on the register or they got a, you know, actual receipt that wasn't, you know, so it was a lot of things that were improved and improvements.
And so what were the big surprises? Like people who don't own grocery stores, for example, might not know that, you know, you have to have a minimum order to get an account from whatever. And, you know, like what were you just like, no way is this the way that it works?
The operating costs.
Yeah.
Operating costs of a grocery store is insane.
Yep.
You want inventory to move. That's always a positive thing when you move inventory, but you have to re-up, right? You got to purchase that. So to see a store that is as small as it is with a massive operating budget, that was my first overhaul. Not to say let's get the budget down, because that you got to keep a certain amount of, you know, amount for sales.
Right.
I expected payroll and all of the, like, I was aware of that. But yeah, just the amount of money you spend in product.
Well, and also, sorry to interrupt you, but I remember this, like when we first turned the front of the cooking school into a cafe.
Mm-hmm.
I remember, you know, the pars, right? Like you didn't want to only make 4 scones because people, you know, people got mad when they came in and it was like 8:15 and they were gone. Yeah. But if you made, you know, 16 scones, then you had waste at the end of the day, but you could only make a tray of, you know, and every single item was like, you want to look plentiful.
Yeah.
And you want to look like there are options, but you also don't want to have all, you know, all of this like waste, and you don't want to spend the money on making stuff. I would imagine when you're ordering produce, it's even more so, because it's, you know, there's this incredibly, you know, someone might come in one day and decide to buy a ton of celery and you have no idea that that's going to happen. You know, how do you even, how do you make pars for everything?
I think that's where I just, and I'm still fine tuning that. Let me be very upfront.
Mm-hmm.
But you hit the nail on the head, because it's like, I can go through and I'm a numbers person, right? So I can look and see, well, we're only selling 10 bottles of vitamin C a month.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to make sure we keep, you know, 4 on the shelf per week.
Right.
But then people will say, well, you don't have enough, so they won't buy. Or if there's only one left, people will pass it and say, oh, I don't want to take the last one.
Right.
And so people like to see plenty. They like plentifulness in order for them to feel secure in buying.
Yep.
They don't understand that's also waste for me.
Right.
So I have a loss because I have these 50 bottles. And if it's a, you know, food-based and, you know, so you have something that's there with a short shelf life. So you try to make up for things with longer shelf life versus the short shelf life item. But then it's the same thing. We have, you know, a case of 88 apples and they go down. It's like, do we order another case? Because we know we're going to wait. But then you have these 10 apples left. No one wants to purchase because it's scarce. And so it's definitely a game of illusion.
Yep.
And how do you master that? And a lot of that comes in, again, still learning and just placement. It comes in and just, you know, the design of the space and making things not look so scarce. And
right.
Because, you know, I try to explain this to folks as well. Like, you don't want us to have a bounty of fresh fruit that's going to go bad, because right. now we're losing.
Right.
And if we lose, we can't pay staff.
Yeah.
But no one wants to hear that.
I think especially, I mean, you know, I think the American consumer especially yeah. is used to those mountains, you know, of like perfectly perfect apples
yeah.
that has like the sprayer constantly going, like you're somehow you're in a grove or right. I don't know, a bushel. Right. I don't know where, you know,
yeah, yeah.
whatever. But, you know, meanwhile, that, I mean, and that creates this whole other problem in the system where people aren't comfortable taking an apple that might have a little ding yeah. on it or might not be yeah. perfectly shaped. And, you know, thankfully there are people trying to work on that in the food system, but it's just, I would imagine really challenging, especially you said, I mean, you're near a Whole Foods. Is that?
I did move the store. Another
you did.
Wonderful thing. Yeah, I moved it. So we're still not, you know, far, we're further away from the Whole Foods than we were previously. But but there are other options. There are other options. So I really can't focus on that. I'm aware and I'm checking prices, but I have to think, what is it that we bring to the table?
Why did you move the store?
I think the store needed to move, period. Mm-hmm. Let me say that. The building that we were in, again, there had not been, it's a whole host, but there had not been any renovations mm-hmm. to the store since 1980. uh-huh. So we had, and so the building owners were kind of like, well, what's the problem? You know, he's been fine with
right.
it.
Again, like, you know, we had to walk 17 miles to school in bare feet. Why should you get the bus?
Yeah. Yeah. And so it became one of those, well, he hasn't complained. And literally they said, well, he's never put in a service report mm-hmm. In 22 years or whatnot. So mm-hmm. all of a sudden you have a problem with this door not working
yeah.
and you don't find water dripping down on, you know, over the produce section. Like, this lady's too good for, you know. Like,
I'm just enjoying this story so much. I'm literally sitting here just, I have a massive smile and I'm picturing this movie and someone's got to make it. Maybe it's a documentary, I don't know, but it's just great.
I mean, the guys were looking at me like, who do you think you are?
Right, you're so snobby that you don't want, like, dirty water dripping on the potatoes. Yeah.
So magically, the lease was up. Mm-hmm. And I knew that going in. And so that was also a question when he said, hey, the lease is going to be up on this date. So I know the building is not up to par. So that was kind of in October 2019. That was part of the conversation. So as we got there close to November 2020, I was like, yeah, we're moving. And it just worked out great. And I'm really someone who's into kind of like a minimalist design. Mm-hmm. I value that. I did minimalist, you know, wardrobe. And so I wanted a store that, here we go, right? We have a store that cleaner, minimal, and mm-hmm. simple kind of placement of items on the shelf, where it's not like things falling off the shelf because they're so abundant.
Right.
Also trying to heal people in a way that you don't have to see a cluttered, massively filled shelving to recognize that there's health here. So there are people who may get and may not. And so I know I'm taking a risk on that one, but I like to, you know, come in and see the shelf and, you know, maybe I can see through to the next shelf over and that's okay, you know?
Yeah. Are you able to, I mean, just calculate a little bit, like, retention of your old customers? I'm sure there were some who was like, no, I'm not going there. But then my guess is that you got probably a whole new customer
yes.
that would not have gone to the old one. So do you have yeah. any way of calculating that or guesstimating that? Mm-hmm. I don't, obviously not numbers, but just in general.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and that's a really good point because I anticipated a significant loss with the move. Mm-hmm. I anticipated the loss with the move because it's further south, and you don't know much about the St. Louis area, but mm-hmm. whenever it's like, oh, you're south, and it's like, I'm literally a mile from the last place.
Right.
But the concept of you're south, you're in this other part of the city, we lost people there. We lost people because they just had an attachment to the previous owner. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, what do you mean he's not going to be there? I'm like, he is retiring. You know, right. I don't think he can, that's what he wants to do.
Right.
So there's a loss there, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I anticipated, you know, a 20 to 30% loss of clientele. And I would say that was consistent. But what I did not anticipate was the amount of new customers and clients. And so I wanted to make up for that 20% loss with another 20%, and it's exceeding that every week. So I'm very appreciative of that. And that was hard trying to explain to staff. They're like, oh, Mr. So-and-so is not coming anymore. And I'm like, well, that was the risk that I had to take. And as a business owner, you know, there's a constant measure of weighing out what is riskier this week.
Yeah.
So I knew that, but I have been very appreciative of the community that has come out to support, the people who are like, finally, you're in the South, now I can come. Or finally, you have a parking lot, because we were in a very busy part of the city with no parking. And and so that's been the overwhelming response, has been like, thank you for moving. Thank you for being in this new space. So that warms my heart each time. I don't, you know, mourn the loss of those who just can't travel. And
they'll come back.
Yeah,
but, they'll be like, all right,
yeah,
I'm back. So, you know, my movie image of Golden Grocer is this like wonderland. It's got health products, pantry staples, local produce, fresh juices, ready to eat plant-based meals. You have crystals there. Like, honestly, it sounds like a utopia. I'm imagining your brain a little bit like, okay, this is what it could be. Mm-hmm. And this is what my vision of it is. And then the reality. And I'm kind of curious what you feel you've had to sacrifice a little bit, or, you know, where you feel you've had to trim your imagination. Or have you not? Has it just been like everyone just, you have these ideas and they manifest and then they, you know, it all goes beautifully.
That's a very interesting question, because you're going to get into my whole personal dark sordid history here. No.
Yeah. I mean, that's part of it. We all have them.
I have been someone who's been very appreciative of the opportunities in my life, and I'm very thankful. And I remember talking to someone who's kind of like a coach. I have a business coach now, but this person was kind of like almost like a life coach. Mm-hmm. And we were talking about all of these opportunities, you know, that I've had. And I said, you know, everything that I've wanted, I've been able to manifest or create or has come to fruition. And he turned to me, he said, oh, you think too small.
Mm-hmm.
That's why everything, you're making these small goals and you're allowing them to be small and achieve them.
Huh. That's an interesting spin on it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, checking all of these things off, like, look at this, I checked off. I went to naturopathic medical school. I opened this business. And so ever since then, that has stuck with me. And I have huge visions for the store. I have huge visions. And part of it is just being just a bountiful place of resource for all. And to have, once we are able to have, you know, more capacity within the store and people coming through, I want it to be a place of knowledge and education. So classes, which I'm rolling out a class schedule now and having events to feature local vendors and small and up and coming businesses. And that is all coming to fruition. So I'm pushing for that. I haven't released it. What I have sacrificed is my timeline.
Yeah.
What I have had to be okay with is that some days are going to be not so great days.
Mm-hmm.
And just be okay with it. Don't beat yourself up and don't question society and what's wrong with the world. And is it the pandemic or do we not have enough on the show?
Right.
You know, I would go into this spiral of what have I done wrong for today to be such a low sale day. And then I can't tie my emotional, you know, existence into a low sale versus a high sale day.
Yeah.
So as I am relinquishing that, I am sacrificing that this is no longer the perfect image. I know what I want for it. I know what I want to see, but I've detached from the need for it to look perfectly.
I love that. And I feel that way with the sauce business too. I mean, you know, I almost feel myself saying things like, I need a good email. I need a good Slack. I need a pump of dopamine basically right now. Like, because when you are starting something from scratch or building something new that was there, but you're basically building something new and, you know, you're just constantly climbing and bushwhacking and getting scraped and having to pull people along the journey. And if you look at every day or even every week, there's so many jagged, sad, depressing, so many more no's than yeses, so many more bad days than good days, you know, and that, but that it's just, if you live by that and you're, and you ride those waves too hard, you just get exhausted.
Exactly. Exactly. So I am actively working to relinquish that attachment and just being in the space of gratitude that we are here. I'm here. We have a place. And then some, if it was one person that came in today, hopefully there were more than one, but that I hope that one person got what they needed.
Yeah.
And they got the support and they felt okay. And they felt like this was a place that resonated with them. So I try to stay in that space mentally. So yeah, I've sacrificed that this will be how I, the numbers will look, or this will look by, you know, June of 2020. And just said, you know what? Let me just focus on being here, providing the goods that I really want people to be exposed to, and go from there.
So speaking of all that, I don't know if you know this, but my master's degree is in food studies and food systems. Oh. And I did a lot of work on grocery store ownership and sort of the history of the grocery store and larger themes kind of connecting grocery store ownership and especially sort of the community self-determination, power, control, and race. And I've read some quotes, you know, I know you're thinking a lot about, as a Black female business owner, you're not just building a grocery store and you're building, you know, you're building community and self-determination and a hub, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm wondering, you know, A, I'd love you to just talk a little bit about it. And B, you know, like, I just think of myself, like, as, you know, as a white founder, I didn't feel, I wanted to build a community, but I didn't feel that additional pressure that somehow I was like representing something larger than myself. And I can't imagine that kind of pressure. And I'd love to hear your thoughts on it.
Yeah. Often when I'm asked about that, you know, what is it like to be a Black woman and owning a grocery store? And I always say, I wish I wouldn't have to be the Black woman that owns groceries. You know, it is not to get into the, you know, the past of America and the socioeconomic, you know, pitfalls that many of us have fallen into and continuously face and are working to climb out of. Based off of just systemic racism, existence of, you know, horrible.
You can get into it. That's why we're here.
But it is, being a business owner always made sense to me because I felt like I have ideas, I have things that I want to do, and I it just makes sense for me to do them in the way that I wanted to do them. And that does stem from upbringing and knowing that, you know, you're capable and you have the wherewithal to do things that make sense to you. But even the unspoken component of that was, you do this for your community. Like, you don't have to, you know, have a whole dissertation on why I did. It's just, you know, I think about my parents. It's like, you knew you did stuff because of the community. So I, that has always been a part of kind of my thread and fiber of existence without even being asked. So now it's always interesting when I'm asked that question, it's like, huh, let me kind of go back and see, why am I doing this? And it stems from my parents and seeing how they always did things that were not just about them. So, going into naturopathic medicine, I was very active as a youth mentor and worked in the community and marched with, you know, social organizations, you know, to uplift the Black community. So that's always been part of my upbringing. So having a business was I'm going to have a space where you don't feel the disparities. You don't feel the judgment. You know, you go into a shop and you always wonder, is this shopkeeper being rude to me because I'm Black or because they're just having a horrible day?
Right.
And I don't know many people that have to parse through those many layers of existing in America.
Yeah.
But I know most of my Black counterparts, we do.
Yeah.
And so sometimes it's just refreshing to go in somewhere and just shop and not have to worry about being followed around or stereotyped. And so having a business was always part of that. Let's have a space where we can just be. The only thing we wanted to do was to live our lives and live fruitfully and then pass on to the next generation. And like, we all want the same thing. We all want the same thing. But that layer of racism that topples even the existence of your reality of wanting to go to the store or go to be a business owner is heavy and burdensome and is exhausting.
Yeah.
So having a business, it was always kind of second nature. I got to have a space. When you get into healing is not about race or color. It's about and I'm not going to get into religious backgrounds, but I think we all exist as kind of energy.
Mm-hmm.
And we vibrate at different, you know, vibrations. And that's, again, just based off where you are and your kind of spiritual outlook on life. And so when you tap into kind of healing, it's so much more universal. It's so much more open. And then even to see where there's disparities in that was annoying to me.
Mm-hmm.
To see that, you know, people go to a doctor or practitioner and they get subpar care because of their race. And I thought, this is the fucking fine line. I'm sorry. I was like, this is it.
Yeah.
So I have to have a space where anyone can come and feel great.
Yeah.
And that is the part of healing. Healing is just knowing that you have the ability to heal. And then being in a space safe enough to exercise those healing practices or rituals. And the store, when I first started going to that store, the owner, who is a white male,
mm-hmm.
had a space that was predominantly Black people.
Mm.
And no one knew for years that this previous owner was white. So even now I'm meeting people and they're like, you're the owner? And it's like, well, who was the last owner? And was he a Black guy? And I'm like, no. So it's interesting that here's someone who clearly opened the door and opened the space for all, because I think it's easier to do that in healing without the judgment, the criticism, where people felt comfortable.
Right.
So there's even more that kind of layer with Golden Grocer of this is our space.
Yeah.
And so what I wanted to do was to open up the shelves to business owners, and I say local business owners, but I do want to have a good majority of those business owners be Black business owners.
Right. I was going to ask you about that, like actively seeking out products made by Black founders and Black owners. Yeah.
Absolutely. Because, you know, I would try products, and I mean, I have a coffee vendor, Black and Bold Coffee, and I'm like, this is great coffee. Why can't I find this everywhere?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so there's an intentionality with that because I know personally the discrepancies that you face was like, well, why is your product good? Like the extra question of, well, why would your product be worthy of being on the shelf?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, well, I know I make good products.
Right.
Read the ingredients and here's my process. And so that was important. But of course, what comes with that is good products are good products are good products. And so I'm really passionate about kind of local and small, you know, small batch type of vendors, because I know the struggle. I know how hard it is to get on. Everyone wants to get on Whole Foods' shelf. You know, let's get in Whole Foods. And I thought, well, I'm not Whole Foods, but I'm Golden Grocer.
And you have an amazing social media, and your posts about us were like, we were like, oh my gosh, like, what is this amazing place? Yeah. I mean,
just not to pivot from that, but that is my spouse who does all the social media.
Well, he's Canadian, nice, and good at social.
I think I made it up, you know.
Yeah. Well, he clearly did well too. So,
and I have to say this. Sorry if this is off topic, but I'm not a sauce person. But I have always been seeking sauces. Like, I just throw mustard on everything. I know I shouldn't even say that out loud.
Yeah.
But the tahini turmeric sauce.
Yeah.
Because I am not a chef. Let me just be really clear on this. My go-to meal is like, I'm going to saute some kale and tomato, and I'll throw it over some, you know, red quinoa, real simple type of foods that I prepare. But then, man, I have these sauces, and I literally drizzled that turmeric tahini sauce. And my daughter's like, oh, what's going on here? Like, you know, all of a sudden you're like a culinary genius. I'm like, yes, I am.
Aw, we actually have, like, you might just be a culinary genius, like, in some of our language. Because, I mean, I love the fact that you segued to us. I feel like I certainly don't want to be like, thank you for sharing these very deep thoughts about, systemic racism. And now let's talk about our sauces. So, like, thank you for the segue.
Well, the segue part of that, because when you are championing for many people, for the underrepresented, I am someone who's now passionate about that in business. I'm passionate about supporting other businesses because I know the struggle. I know how difficult it is. I know the pitfalls, and do you have your food served safe, and do you have a commercial kitchen, and all of, you know, you got to deal with the city. And so that is another thing that keeps us, and I don't want to get overly dramatic, but it keeps us oppressed in a sense. You have this business idea and you want to break out. And then there's just these many things, insurance, good grief, business insurance, liability insurance. So I have been more of an advocate for small businesses as of late because I see people with great ideas, great follow through. And then it's just something like taxes.
Yeah.
Or, you know, health departments, like, no. And it's like, come on, you know. So all the more reason that is becoming my healing practice is supporting other small businesses.
That's amazing. I mean, I how did we get so lucky to get on your shelves? Like, I think you said UNFI something. They said like, Central. Yeah, what happened? And
I'm going to also tell you, I'm a little superficial. And so I love the packaging.
Yeah. Thank you. No, I mean,
packaging to me. And that's been one of the things when I do talk to small businesses, I'm kind of like, I'm an asshole to some people. And I know that because I'm like, what is this label? You know, if I sprinkle water on it, it's peeling off. Mm-hmm. Like, those are the things that little bitty thing, that investment in a label is what puts you on the shelf next to, you know, Chef Boyardee.
Yep.
And so labeling, packaging is like, that's like my Zen space when I could look at someone's packaging. And so it's a superficial component, but it actually is what catches the eye. You guys had, and when I saw it, I was like, I don't know what this is, but I want to try it. It was simple, again, minimalist. I love that look. And so then we had them on the shelf and they went, like I said, I have to place another order. And unfortunately, I was probably one of the people who purchased the most because I have about 7 in my refrigerator.
Right. All right. Well, I'll get your address after we stop and I'll send you a case just so you can have some. I don't want you eating. What do they call it? Like, high on your own supply or whatever. And I don't want you to have to do that.
We have more of the sauce in the fridge. I was like, yeah, but you know, I need stuff for my, because I can make bland foods and nice spread. On it's like I'm a culinary genius. So yeah, it was the first thing was it was eye-catching. You did a great job there, and I just wanted it on the shelf in the refrigerator, like it looked good. And I tried it, and I was like, oh goodness,
thank you.
And obviously the clean ingredients.
Yeah, no, I'm so thrilled that you did. I'd love to hear sort of, normally I would ask kind of industry stuff, but I think I very rarely get a healer on my show. So I would just love, you know, your sort of final thoughts on staying well, you know, staying sound. You know, what do you have a, you know, you have a bunch of people hopefully listening. What do you want us to do for our own health and the health of the people around us?
I want you to be kind to yourself. You know, I think we've all had a rough year. I think we've all had, I don't know what everyone's health history, but we've had moments in life where they just kind of turn us topsy-turvy. And I just wish for people to take those moments and allow a little bit of gentleness. I think healing comes through naturally. It comes when it's ready, and it comes as it should. And it looks very different from what's in your head and what's in your journal and what's on the plan of healing. And so if I'm able to be kind and gentle and open to all that is supposed to come to me, then I take away the judgment, the fear, the criticism, the worry. And that's in my personal life, that's in my relationships, and that's in my business.
Amazing. So
I think it's a good place to start. And then trusting that, you know what, this food nourishes me, so I'm going to consume it. Trusting that it is nighttime and I'm tired now, so I'll resist the need to swipe again and lay down. But if you trust, your body speaks to you. And it's really just waiting on us to stop and listen.
And then when we push through that stuff and we, I mean, that's when the bad stuff happens, I feel like, you know, like,
yeah,
that's when the hatred happens and that's when the fear happens. And that's when, you know, I just think that's beautiful.
No, you're right. And especially being a business owner, because there's so much I should be doing. And
right.
We're shooting all over ourselves. I should be doing this. I should be doing that. But, you know, it's okay to be a unitasker. Know that, you know, the slow business model, the slow food model, I think is a great concept of slow living and intentional living. And so, you know, for someone who's historically been kind of a very scientific, didactic thinker and overly kind of type A in a work setting, everything I'm telling you is things I'm working on myself.
Right. So for sure.
I'm not perfecting that at this moment, but I am working to perfect it in time.
Well, Jamila, I'm so psyched that the pouch has caught your eye and that we ended up in your store and that I got to meet you. I'm going to be emailing you right after this with like a bunch of follow-up questions just about my personal life. And, I also want you to see our new packaging because it's coming out in the fall and it's just as clean and it's just as minimal, but it has just a little bit of color. So for all the people that are like, meh, you know, it's too plain and it looks like a, you know, blood bag or something. I don't know. I'm like,
yeah, I know.
Geez, man. But thank you so much for taking the time to come on the show. I really enjoyed the conversation and just loved listening to you speak. So thank you so much.
And I have to say thank you to you because you're a healer and to put a product out and have faith and trust in what you know as a culinary genius, obviously. It takes a lot of guts and a lot of depth, and to have work that's judged daily by different palates is impressive. I'm sure you've heard it all. So I applaud you for doing such great work, and also having a platform to further heal and share is pretty awesome. So I'm honored and I really am very appreciative of the opportunity.
Thank you. So for everyone, I have many friends that I'm going to be introducing to Jamila for her store. But for those of you who just want to follow Golden Grocer and the journey on Instagram, it's Golden Grocer STL. I've never really had like a deep yearning to go to St. Louis, but I do now. And all of you guys listening, thank you so much, as always, for listening. I think Matt and Amanda are engineering this one. They're like tag teaming. So thank you for everything. And I'll be back next week with another episode of In the Sauce.
In the Sauce is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.